It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Glad you could be here. An anonymous caller has terrorized communities around the country, including here in Wisconsin, by reporting false shooting threats at over 180 schools, according to NPR's investigations. We explore what is going on with these hoaxes and the impact on local police departments and schools. Bring your thoughts on hoaxes and swatting, where law enforcement descends on a location where a crime is reportedly in progress. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Odette Youssef is domestic extremism correspondent for NPR and has been investigating hoax active shooter calling sprees. Odette, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thanks for having me.
Well, let's discuss swatting first, these prank calls in which someone, you know, makes a false report and then in order to get a SWAT team dispatched to like a school. Why is swatting dangerous?
Well, swatting, as you mentioned, is a report where someone is about to or in the middle of committing a crime somewhere, and what it's intended to do is prompt just an immense law enforcement response, so that police and SWAT teams, hence the name swatting, are deployed to that location. They're often entering the location with their guns, with their guns out. They may be breaking down doors to get into the location, and it can be extremely dangerous because if the target of the swatting scheme is unsuspecting, they may think that somebody's coming, you know, breaking into their home. And this has actually resulted, Kate, in fatalities. In 2017, there was quite a well-known one where a man in Wichita was killed as a result of a swatting hoax. This really kind of started with extremely online communities. You know, it became sort of known as a prank within the live gaming community, where they would actually, people would be swatted in real time while the people, you know, who had called in the hoax were watching it happen on their computers in real time. It became also part of the toolkit and playbook for extremist groups to try to target some of their perceived enemies. But this seems to be something kind of new, what we're seeing now with these school swattings, because what we're learning about it suggests that these calls may be coming from overseas, and just the scale and the scope of them.
Yes, the scale and the scope. What have you learned about this wave of swatting across America that's targeting schools?
Well, we first started hearing about this in like mid-September. So, what we've been doing is just gathering local reports about these incidents at schools all over the country. The first one that we've been able to find was September 13th. And in the six or so weeks since then, we have counted close to 200 instances of schools being swatted that we believe fit one particular pattern that we believe could be connected to this one caller. I will say that I do believe that we have significantly undercounted the number, just because not every local report has been sharing all the details of the schools that have been receiving these calls.
I'm going to reintroduce you here for a moment. Odette Youssef with us as we discuss the series of hoax school shooting reports across the country, what that means. Odette is a domestic extremism correspondent for NPR who's been tracking this data. You can join in at 800-642-1234. So, Odette, NPR obtained recordings that suggest a connection between this recent wave of false school shooting threats and several false bomb threats made in March and April. And let's listen to a part of a false bomb threat placed in April.
Hello. Suspicious backpack has been left in the high school. Hello. Binton High School, number 205. Hello. Suspicious backpack has been left in the high school.
So what do you know from analyzing the calls themselves?
Yeah, so that particular call was made to the Bossier Parish Sheriff's Office in Louisiana back in late April. And the reason that we sort of started looking into these hoax bomb alerts was that when we were looking at the active shooter calls, some authorities in Minnesota had told us that the calls they had received about active shooters sounded really similar to calls that they had received earlier back in the spring about these bombs. And so we went back, we looked for news articles about hoax bomb threats in the spring, and Bossier Parish was one of the places where this happened at Benton High School. And so what we found when we, you know, we've been submitting a lot of open records requests to learn more about these calls, and it turned out that the Bossier Parish Sheriff's Office did quite a thorough investigation into the source of this call, including tracing back the phone number that was used to make the call, things like the IP addresses that were associated with that internet phone number, and even the Gmail account that had been created to be able to make that internet phone number account. So we were able to look more closely at what happened in the spring with this one particular phone number that had made this hoax call, not only to this one place in Louisiana, but as it turned out, had called roughly 162 unique places over a 40-day period. And we were able to really examine sort of the mode of operation of this caller.
And this was rapid dialing. I mean, from one call to the next, I understand.
Yeah, I mean, it was very interesting because even though this person, even though these records showed a 40-day period of this phone number, the person really was only active for 10 of those days. And actually, you know, more than three quarters of their activity with this phone number was on 3 days. And when we analyzed the, you know, activity on those 3 days, this person was treating this like their full-time job. They would log on to their internet phone number account at a certain hour that would be Monday. It would be morning time for the place that they were targeting. And they would just keep systematically dialing and redialing numbers, sometimes with as few as 4 seconds in between. Sometimes, you know, there were longer breaks, 20 minutes. At one point, there was at least an hour break. So, you know, but this would be their day until they were done 6 to 8 hours later.
State and local law enforcement have said that they're working with the FBI to trace the source of the calls. What have you learned about the investigations at both the state and federal level? What is going on?
You know, the FBI has been pretty tight-lipped about this. You know, what they've said is that they are aware of these incidents and they are working with state and local officials. And in some states, it does look like there has been much more coordination in terms of gathering the information pertaining to these calls. I've already referenced Minnesota. They seem to have been gathering information and disseminating alerts to the schools at a much earlier stage than some other states have. But we haven't learned so far terribly much about where higher authorities are with their investigation.
Odette Youssef, national security correspondent for NPR, focused on extremism, explaining dangerous hoax calls across the U.S. targeting schools and what she's learned through her reporting on this. Join in our conversation about hoax calls, about copycat calls, what can be done by law enforcement. 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We dig into a hoax calling spree, recent lockdowns at schools reacting to false active shooter threats, and what schools and law enforcement should do about it. NPR found local reports around the country that 182 schools in over two dozen states, including Wisconsin, received these hoax calls about threats between mid-September and last week. Join our conversation about scare campaigns, about public safety, swatting cases, and whether these can be viewed as acts of terrorism. 800-642-1234. Odette Youssef is a domestic extremism correspondent for NPR and stays with us. Odette, let's talk about tracing these calls and what the connection could be to Ethiopia and the technology to make these calls.
Yeah, so, you know, some of the news reports that we were gathering when we started investigating this were quoting local officials who said that federal authorities had told them that these calls might be connected to overseas, they might be connected to Africa, and then there were a couple that said specifically that they might be connected to Ethiopia. And when we ended up obtaining those records from that one parish in Louisiana about the false bomb alert they received back in April, we were able to look at the IP addresses that were associated with those calls. And indeed, they do trace back to an IP address that is managed by something called the AFRINIC network in Africa, and specifically managed by Ethio Telecom, which is basically the state-owned telecom company in Ethiopia. You know, I will note that that does not conclusively mean that these calls were in fact originating in Ethiopia. There are various ways that people can sort of disguise where they're really located. You know, we explored this question of whether they were using a VPN service, for example, to redirect, you know, to Ethiopia for their traffic. We think that that's actually quite unlikely, given the rules that the text or the internet phone number company has around signing up for accounts. But it is still possible that somebody was using sort of a compromised IP address mm-hmm. that is based in Ethiopia to do these calls. You know, one thing that has really helped us try to identify which calls fit into this pattern is simply the voice and accent of the person making the calls. You know, as you heard in the tape that we listened to in the previous segment, you know, this is somebody who does have a heavy accent, sounds to be perhaps a North African accent. And so we do think that it is quite possible that this person is, in fact, located in Ethiopia.
What about the platform TextNow that allows users to place anonymous calls with U.S. numbers? How could that type of platform be linked to what is going on here?
So that is the platform that this caller has been using to make these calls. You know, this is what was found in the investigative records that we have looked at. We've also found that for this more recent spree of false active shooter calls, I think I've gotten so far about 7 unique phone numbers that have been used to make some of these calls recently, and all of those have been TextNow phone numbers. You know, this is voice over internet protocol. So these are internet phone numbers. You can just sign up with them online. I signed up for one. It took, you know, less than 3 minutes to do. And what it does is it gives you a US-based phone number. And these are numbers that require, you know, very little verification to sign up for them. They're so easy to create, and they're also really easy to ditch and make a new one if it gets, you know, reported.
Mm. We're talking about this wave of false reports putting schools across the country on lockdown. Odette Youssef is a domestic extremism correspondent with NPR, and you can join in the conversation about swatting these hoaxes. 800-642-1234. Odette, Wisconsin lawmakers like State Senator Rob Coles of Green Bay has called for the perpetrator or perpetrators of these calls to be charged under Wisconsin law. What sort of criminal charges could people making these calls face?
So this is a really interesting question because swatting is a crime in many states, and it is typically the kind of crime that has really only had to be handled at the state level. What is making this so unusual is that if, in fact, it is the case that this is an overseas caller, we don't actually have any federal anti-swatting legislation in this country. And so this is, you know, prompting some questions about whether it's time to finally pursue that kind of legislation. There has been legislation to that effect introduced in the past, but it hasn't come to fruition. And so, you know, I think that that is a real question that some of our federal lawmakers are going to have to look at. I think also it's, you know, something that our federal law enforcement agencies have to consider when it comes to what authorities they have when, you know, investigating this, because this does not fall under sort of our classic definition of terrorism.
And Bozier, when you talked with Bozier, they said, look, this is terrorism, but is that different from an act of terrorism in order to investigate this as a real crime?
Yeah, I mean, when we talk about foreign terrorism, you know, typically you have to find, the case has to either be one that's affiliated with an organization like Al-Qaeda or ISIS, for example, or there has to be a clear political motivation or a geopolitical motivation behind it. And that is what has been such a mystery here, Kate. We cannot figure out what motive an overseas actor may have for calling active shooter threats at schools. We know that it prompts sort of the psychological toll. We know that among kids and teachers and parents that are in those communities, we know that it is siphoning off law enforcement resources to a hoax. But that still doesn't check off one of the sort of important boxes that you need for something to qualify as an act of foreign terrorism. And we're not going to be able to call it really an act of terrorism in sort of the technical sense until we discern why this person is doing this.
Mike from Slinger called in, couldn't stay on the line, but Mike wonders if there is anything common about the schools targeted, that if you saw any patterns, are they suburban or urban? You know, do they have anything in common?
No. There are public schools, there are private schools, there are schools that we found in major metropolitan cities, there are schools that we found in very small places in the United States. What's really been just so remarkable to me in looking at the call records of those false bomb alerts back in the spring is that this person had a pretty much a working list of locations to call. You know, upwards of 90% of the places they called were schools directly or law enforcement agencies, fire departments or dispatch agencies. So they somehow have been able to obtain pretty much working lists of institutions that have crossed both public and private.
This puts schools in a really tough spot. How are schools responding to these fake active shooter threats?
Well, you know, in many of the open records reports that I have received responses to, the schools are going into lockdown. They are notifying their dispatch agencies, and police are being deployed in large numbers to the schools. In some cases, some states have sort of figured out that, you know, there are, like, their state is being targeted on a particular day, and so they sort of put out the announcement so that, you know, people, the law enforcement agents respond, but they are also aware that it could very well be a hoax. You know, the tricky thing here, Kate, is that in the wake of, you know, horrible tragedies like the shooting at Uvalde, nobody wants to be caught flat-footed. You know, the moment that a reported active shooter is said to be at a school, nobody wants to be in the situation where they don't respond adequately, and then it turns out to have actually been the case. And so, you know, schools are trying to balance that, and local law enforcement agencies are trying to balance that against, you know, the fact that this can create a lot of trauma for the kids that are being suddenly placed into lockdown, panic for the parents, and just sort of the siphoning off of public resources to deal with, you know, a prank.
Odette, thank you for joining us and for sharing your reporting on this.
Thanks for having me.
Odette Youssef is a domestic extremism correspondent for NPR. And we have a link, by the way, to her reporting on swatting and these hoax calls. Go to wpr.org/mornings. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.